This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The year was 1950. James Paul Warburg was standing before the United States Senate, and here's what he said. We will have world government, whether you like it or not. We're either going to have it by consent or by force. That was in 1950, friends, believe it or not. In 1990, our president, George Herbert Walker Bush, again stood before a joint session of Congress, this time around the time of Gulf War I. He said that the Gulf War was opening the way to what he called a new world order. It was the first time an American president had voiced those words publicly. Not only did he voice them then before the United States Congress in joint session, but he also voiced them over 200 times during the balance of his administration. Hence, that which had been called up to then nothing but a conspiracy theory of wild, imaginative folks had become a living reality. Today on Viewpoint, again, we're going to talk about that new world order. We're going to talk about the whole concept of global governance, but we're going to talk about it in particular with regard to its application in the area of health. You see, everything has to turn global. Everything has to turn global. And our guest today says that as a result, our nation's sovereignty hangs in the balance. So it's not just a matter of whether Republicans or Democrats are going to gain the presidency again. It's a matter of something far more profound, far more enduring, and it has to do with whether or not we'll have a nation at all. American sovereignty hangs in the balance. Many of you have known that yours truly practiced law for 20 years as a trial lawyer in California until the Lord spoke to my heart that I've been pleading the cause of Med long enough. It was time to plead his cause in the land as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation in America's greatest crisis hour here on the near edge of the second coming of Christ. But there are a lot of things, you see, that have to happen. There are a lot of things that have to happen according to the Bible, according to Scripture, in order for the end of all things to come about. And one of those things is the world has to turn global. In other words, the Tower of Babel of Genesis chapter 11 has to be resurrected as it were on steroids to govern the world as an alternative salvation message led ultimately by a counterfeit Christ known most commonly as the Antichrist. But what's going to happen in the meantime? What is ushering in all of these events before us? Well, today on Viewpoint, another lawyer is joining us, a female lawyer this time, and her name is Regina, but she actually goes by Reggie. Reggie Littlejohn is joining us here from Maryland to talk about the World Health Organization and the rules that are coming down the pike, friends, that are jeopardizing your freedom, American sovereignty, and heading us into the finality of this global order or great reset. So, Reggie, it's good to have you on the program.
Thank you so very much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, you're a Yale graduate, aren't you?
Yes, Yale Law School and also Yale Divinity School.
Oh, Yale Divinity School. Okay. Now, is this good, bad, or ugly that you're from Yale? I mean, given the experiences with Harvard and so on.
I really, really enjoyed my time at Yale. I felt very, very privileged to go there. However, I've sort of had a reawakening since that time. I mean, when I was there, I was as far left as any one of them. I fit right into the crowd. And people say, how did you come out of Yale? And it's like, actually, I went through a crisis. I practiced law for 8 years, and then I almost died. I had a terrible illness. I was like disabled for 5 years.
Mm.
And during that time, the Lord impressed on my heart that he wanted me to to use the legal skills that I had gained as an attorney to advocate for his cause, and that was for women in China. But during that time, even though I'd gone to seminary at Yale and did very well, I had never read the Bible cover to cover. And
really?
Yeah. No, you don't need to do that in seminary. At least not at Yale.
So, that's well spoken, girl.
Right. So when I was ill, I just felt really called to read the Bible over and over again, Genesis to Revelation, Genesis mm-hmm. to Revelation, over and over and over again, different translations, different sets of notes, etc. And I felt that I really was cleansed, you know, cleansing you by the power of the water of the Word,
mm-hmm.
And realized that even though I had thought I was a great Christian, you know, I had gone to seminary, I'd actually been a Methodist pastor for a while, I was a pastor's wife, and was not, you know, committing adultery, I wasn't killing anybody, I wasn't stealing, so I was a ducky Christian.
Uh-huh.
What I realized is that my entire foundation of what I was looking at, you know, my was based on idolatry, you know, idolatry of money, power, prestige, all of that.
Mm.
And God took that all away during, you know, when I was sick and left me with what was important, which was Him. So that's a long answer to your short question.
Well, it's a wonderful answer, and I'm so glad I asked the question. We need to know who we are. It helps us to create an interconnection in the Lord and in His kingdom. And what I'm gathering from your short statement there is that you are dedicated to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, just as I am and most of our listeners are. And so that binds us together in a oneness of mind, heart, and spirit as we talk about some of these other issues that, on the one hand, could seem to commandeer all of our interest, but in reality, our view on those is actually driven by our love for the Lord and His kingdom, aren't they?
Well, that's right, because what's happening with this globalist takeover is absolutely anti-God. And, you know, and it needs to be stopped. It's very, very dangerous.
Well, so it is very dangerous. No question about it. But why? The question is, why is it dangerous? To say that it's dangerous is kind of like making a preliminary statement to the jury. And now you got it. They say, okay, prove it.
Okay. All right. So how long do you have? I mean,
we've got 55 minutes total here on the program today.
Okay.
That's why we need all that time. We don't do soundbite broadcasting here. So What we're really talking about here to focus in, we're talking about the World Health Organization, which is something different than the World Economic Forum, and the way that it has been developing and now intensifying over the past several years to basically establish rules and regulations that will commandeer every man, woman, and child in the world, including in the United States. That's how I see it. We're going to open that up after this break. Our special guest, Reggie Littlejohn, that is the World Health Organization, she says, violates its own rules, and for what purpose is our sovereignty hanging in the balance?
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. As we say regularly here on this program, viewpoint determines destiny, and there's no question about it. There are no neutral viewpoints in our lives. We may think there are, but they're not. And every viewpoint determines a decision, and every decision leads us in some direction, either toward or against the Lord and His purposes in and through our lives and for our world and our country as well and our families. About 1 year, actually 1 year ago, an article came out in WorldNet Daily by Bob Unruh. I want to just share a few words from this to set the stage for the balance of our conversation here with Reggie Littlejohn today. The title is Surveillance Over Every Citizen on Earth. Devious Group Looks to Rule Entire World. The World Health Organization has set its sights on establishing a platform for global governance through health care. So warns former GOP presidential candidate and U.S. Representative Michelle Bachmann, who is in attendance at the 10-day annual assembly in Geneva of the World Health Assembly, considered the decision-making body of the World Health Organization, called WHO. To that end, it has proposed a worldwide convention in which it would assume the authority to make major decisions about health care or health threats and then demand that all nations submit to its decisions and rulings. That would mean the international group could order lockdowns, boycotts, medical treatments such as vaccinations, and much, much more. And the world would be required to obey. President Joe Biden is working to enable the international group to centralize authority, not just for pandemics, but for any health emergency in the hands of the Director General of the World Health Organization. Dark powers that be are trying to rule the world through health care. Whoa, that's a fantastic opening statement to the jury, I think, Reggie. But now it's up to you and me to apply this and help people to understand the horrific implications of this and how it is being ushered in even at this moment to rule the world. Why don't you take the lead?
Okay, so Michelle Bachmann's statement from Geneva was accurate a year ago. It's slightly different now. I just came back from Geneva. Michelle was not there this time, but I was there. And the international health regulations that passed were not quite as egregious as what was proposed a year ago.
Uh-huh.
But they are enough to establish a global totalitarian state. And that's why, you know, Tedros Ghebreyesus, the director general of the World Health Organization, was gloating, absolutely gloating over the passage of these amendments.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into what happened. First of all, I think you mentioned that they were passed illegally.
Right, I didn't mention it, but it's in your opening document here that I have before
right.
me. But when you speak of amendments, let's just define our term. Amendments to what?
Okay. So there's something called the International Health Regulation. International Health Regulation.
Right.
And the most recent draft, the one that has been in force until last weekend, or until June 1st, was passed in 2005.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so those are called the International Health Regulations, and then they wanted to amend them. And there's been a furor over the amendments, and they passed amendments on June 1st. That's one instrument.
That sounds pretty recent and pretty relevant then, doesn't it?
It totally is. And then there is a pandemic treaty, which they had hoped to pass last weekend, but it wasn't ready. So they are going to be negotiating again on it in mid-July, and they're almost surely going to pass it at the next World Health Assembly, and they could pass it before then.
As if they didn't do enough damage the first time around regarding COVID.
Right. Well, okay. Right. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to use the momentum, the residual fear from COVID, to, combined with the fear of the next pandemic, which I don't know if it's going to be the avian flu or what, but in order to install a totalitarian, basically surveillance police state, internationally. Now, so these two instruments, the amendments to the International Health Regulations and the pandemic treaty, have to be taken together because they incorporate each other by reference. All right?
They're
together. And the International Health Regulations, I just want to say that the amendments were passed illegally because the final text of anything that is supposed to be voted on by the World Health Assembly is supposed to be circulated to all the nations 4 months in advance. And they did not circulate the final text until the same day that it was voted on.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. I am.
That sounds like our Congress.
Yeah, you mean like the Pelosi rule, like you'll find out what's in it after you pass it.
Exactly, right?
Right. So that it, they broke their own rules with that, and it just shows how lawless they are. You know, it, the Bible says that in the end times, lawlessness will abound, and the World Health Organization is leading the charge on lawlessness, that's for sure. So it was passed illegally and should be rejected just on that basis. But what it does is there's something called Annex A. It requires state parties, so that would be the United States would be a state party. All the countries in the world who are members are state
all
parties.
All 196 countries.
Right. To strengthen and maintain core capacities in relation to surveillance and risk communication, including addressing misinformation and disinformation.
Oh, lovely.
Right. It's extremely lovely. So they don't define what is going to be surveilled in the international health regulations. But remember, I said it has to be looked at together with the pandemic treaty. So in the pandemic treaty, they have something called One Health. And this One Health doctrine, it says that human health is connected to animal health, is connected to plant health, is connected to the environment. Mm-hmm. And all of these have to be balanced, okay? So what does it mean to balance human health against animal health and plant health? It means that human health doesn't win out, okay? There was an article in The Lancet where it said that all life is equal and of equal concern. So that means that your life, my life, the lives of our children, our parents, our loved ones, are equal and of equal concern to the life of a mosquito or a rat.
Well, no wonder Spain recently gave human rights to gorillas.
So what this does is it's directly contrary to the Bible. I mean, we believe that human beings are created by God in his image and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't any other plant or animal that shares that status. So this is a knocking human beings down from bearers of the divine image and being equal to, you know, gorillas or mosquitoes or what have you.
Uh-huh.
It's actually, I believe it's a religion. But anyway, but what else the One Health approach does is it gives the World Health Organization the right to surveil basically all life on Earth, anything that could be connected to health. So, of course, they're going to be surveilling us on, you know, in terms of our own health, our vaccination status, and
right.
Watch out if you haven't been vaccinated or, you know, you haven't had the latest booster. And then, you know, animal health, plant health, and then the environment, in other words, climate change, so that they can declare a public health emergency of international concern based on climate, and also anything else that affects health. So, for example, it's like today, and this is not directly connected to the World Health Organization, but this is shows the way that they are going to connect everything to health. Vivek Murthy, Surgeon General, has said that that gun violence is you know
a health issue now,
a health issue, and therefore we shouldn't politicize it. Let's not talk about the politics like the Second Amendment. This is a health issue, and so therefore
right.
we need to limit. Gun ownership, et cetera.
And so, therefore, by limiting gun ownership, not only here, but all over the world, you have automatically eliminated any resistance to the oncoming world government.
Right. I mean, as you know, my background is in China. And the reason that they were able to have a Tiananmen Square massacre was because the citizens were not armed. I mean, we have the Second Amendment to protect ourselves against the government, really.
Yes.
And, So this is a way of making sure that we are defenseless. But it's connected to health, all right? They want to connect everything to health. If you're creative, you can connect anything to health.
Well, so you can, as you know, lawyers are adept at basically connecting anything. So what we're in a situation is where a lawyer-type thinking to rationalize any kind of connection that they want to connect is not based upon truth. It's based upon an ultimate agenda, which is globalism or a one world order of government, isn't it?
Precisely. So how are they going to surveil us, right? They are going to surveil us through digital IDs. And that's another thing that these amendments start out. They've got Article 35 of the new International Health Regulation amended. It says establishes health documents, which have to be standardized. They can either be digital or they can be paper, at the discretion of the government. So in other words, if in Africa or some other developing countries, people might not have cell phones. They might not have the ability to have a digital health ID.
Right.
But so the paper IDs are going to be standardized so that they can easily be digitized when they when they're able to digitize them. But these digital health IDs, again, they're using health as the pretext for establishing them. But if you go over onto the World Economic Forum website,
right,
you will find out that there's a whole lot more to these digital IDs than just monitoring what your health is and your vaccination status.
Well, indeed, there is. In fact, I have an article that came out in September of last year by Alex Newman. It's called Conversations That Matter, UN Seeks Digital World Brain and Digitalization of Everything. Through efforts of the United Nations and organizations aligned with it, that would be the World Health Organization, technology and digitalization are converging into a digital world brain that will end up dominating the planet. That was warned by Swedish academic Dr. Jacob Nordengard. A lot of this is coming down the pike in the form of the UN's Our Common Agenda, said Dr. Nordengard, and is taught who has taught at numerous universities in Sweden and wrote several books exposing the global agenda. The whole idea of a global brain, a digital world brain, is almost incomprehensible to most people. Are you able to kind of distill that in a way that the jury of our listeners here can understand?
Well, if you go onto the World Economic Forum website, there's a chart called Digital IDs. And what they want to do is they want to they require a digital ID to do all the following things. And, of course, they say, oh, it's going to make everything so much more convenient.
Right.
But
safe, convenient. We're going to get rid of all kinds of crime. We're going to get rid of all these things. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this cool? Who could possibly resist it?
Exactly. And people fall for it. And so then this is what you're going to need a digital ID to have. You're going to need a digital ID to access health care, insurance, and treatment, to open bank accounts, to carry out online transactions, to travel, to access humanitarian services, to shop and conduct business transactions, in other words, in biblical language, to buy and sell, to participate in social media. So if you want to be on Facebook, you want to be on Twitter, you have to have a digital ID. To pay taxes, to vote, to collect government benefits that would include Medicare or Medicaid, Social Security, and to own a communication device such as a cell phone or computer. So if you want to do any of that, if you want to participate in civilization, you're going to have a digital ID. And not only are you going to have a digital ID, you're going to have to be in good standing, okay?
Hold on just a minute. That being in good standing then becomes the crux, because you could have the digital ID and still not profit from it, because if you disagree with anything that is said and you're caught in disagreeing with the World Order or any of the aspects of it or the World Health Organization, they can cut you off. You're no longer able to access finances, your own finances, because they are all digital and they've been cut off. Sounds an awful lot to me like Revelation chapter 13.
Well, it also sounds a lot like the China social credit system. So this is how I got into this issue was, as you know, my original organization, which is still, my main organization, the funding, the other things I do, such as Anti-Globalist International. But, I was fighting for women's rights in China. That's why the organization is called Women's Rights Without Frontiers. We were fighting forced abortion in China. We also saved baby girls and abandoned widows in the Chinese countryside. And I have, I've been focused on China, women's rights in China, since the mid-90s when I represented a Chinese refugee.
All right, I want you to hold that thought as we go into this break. Hang in there, hold it. The court is now in session. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint, friends. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today, our special guest, Reggie Littlejohn. And she is quite a fascinating person. She's not only the president and founder of the Anti-Globalist International Group, but also before that, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, president and founder of that, which took her, is rooted deeply in China. Now, why would we want to go to China to connect dots here with regard to the risk to American sovereignty and to the globalistic intentions of the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization? Make those connections for us.
Well, the connection is the China social credit system. So in China, they have all the things I just mentioned on the World Economic Forum digital ID chart. They're all connected into a social credit score. Mm-hmm. So in China, they have facial recognition, real-time geolocation. They know what you look like. They know where you are. They know where you work. They know where you live. They are monitoring all of your social media posts, your internet search history. So if you search for something you don't like, for example, Tiananmen Square massacre, your score will go down. Internet spending history, your medical history, your criminal history if you have one, your bank accounts, and your credit cards. They're all centered on this app on your phone, and they put it all together and they come up with a score, and that score reflects how compliant of a Chinese communist sheep you are. And if you're completely compliant, if you never make any waves, if you get all your vaccinations, don't defy anybody on anything, you can lead what looks like a normal life. Although you are a slave, because you know that as soon as you step out of line, your score is going to go down. So, for example, if you criticize the government online, or let's say you buy something that they don't like, you can't buy a gun in China, but in the United States, that would be the equivalent. Something
that's what our new Attorney General, Surgeon General, is trying to suggest now.
Right, exactly. Your score will go down. So if your score goes down, then things will happen to you, like you will lose your job. Your kid will not be able to get into a good school. You will not be able to travel. You will not be able to borrow money in order to, open a business or buy a home. If your score continues to go down, you continue to defy them in whatever way, they will cut you off from your credit cards and your bank accounts. And just think of how far you're going to get with no money, okay? And if you keep it up, they'll just disappear you. And when the United States came out, they were pushing in the beginning of the COVID pandemic, they were pushing vaccine passports.
Right.
And I became aware that the vaccine passport could serve as the platform for the China social credit system. I heard this on a video by somebody who's now a good friend of mine, Naomi Wolf. At the time, I didn't know her personally.
Interesting. Naomi Wolf. Now, that's an interesting name to blend into all this discussion.
Well, yeah, I mean, Naomi Wolf is someone who comes from the left. That's how she describes herself.
Right.
But when she saw that this vaccine passport could serve as the platform for the China social credit system, she raised an alarm, and I was certainly alarmed, sitting in my living room listening to this, and I called two friends of mine, both of whom are very, highly skilled people in technology. And I said, is it true? And one of them is a liberal, one's a conservative.
Uh-huh.
I said, is it true that this vaccine passport can serve as the same platform as a China social credit system? And the conservative guy said, yes, it is true, and that's why we must stop it. And the liberal guy said, yes, it is true, and that's why it's a good thing, because it will force everyone to be vaccinated.
In other words, it will force everyone to do the will of the prevailing government that is going increasingly global.
Right, exactly. And that was when I said, okay, you know what? I need to drop everything and put myself behind this issue. So I co-founded something called the Stop Vaccine Passport Task Force, which I would commend to everyone. I think it has the greatest set of webinars anywhere on that subject. And I also think it succeeded in making that nomenclature, vaccine passport, radioactive. So now they don't call them vaccine passports anymore. They call them digital IDs.
Yes, right.
It's the same thing. And that's the China connection. So I co-founded something called the Sovereignty Coalition to raise awareness, about how our national sovereignty and personal medical freedom are at risk. And now I have founded something called Anti-Globalist International.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Globalist International. You can find it at antiglobalist.net. And I would encourage everybody to do that, because we are taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and trying to stop this new tower of Babel from being erected, or maybe to knock it down. I mean, I don't really know.
Well, but I'll tell you one thing, Reggie. You're going to want to get a hold of my book, Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter.
Uh-huh.
It is a lengthy book, and it deals with all of these subjects in a way that helps to understand the greater picture. You're dealing with some aspects of it. That book puts it in the even bigger perspective and deals with so much of what is taking place here. Now, there's a fella that was the founder of Microsoft and became very, very wealthy as a result. His name is Bill Gates. And he has been at the front of promoting a digital ID. In fact, I have in front of me right now his patent application that I believe it was made in March of 2020 with the U.S. Patent Office. It's called a cryptocurrency system, and the final digits of this are 060606. Now, a lot of people have said, well, that sounds an awful lot like the Mark of the Beast. Well, it does. And what he describes actually sounds like the implementation of that. In fact, not only has he created this patent to bring about a digital control system that weds together health information and control with economic information and control, hence the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization merged now through this quantum dot, perhaps tattoo kind of thing that he's devised. And now he has gone around with a program to all the nations of the earth seeking to basically compel them to adopt this new technology. We're moving very rapidly in this direction, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I know about Bill Gates is that he not only is he involved with that, but he's also involved very heavily with vaccines.
And exactly.
I have seen an interview of him at the World Economic Forum where he says that that vaccines are the most lucrative things he's ever been involved with, and that that he has a 20-to-1 return on investment in vaccines. So this is a big concern, because he's also a major donor, and also with Gavi, which is another vaccine organization, major donors to the World Health Organization.
Exactly.
So this is called a conflict of interest, as you know. But we can't have people who would substantially profit from vaccines funding the World Health Organization that's supposed to be deciding on an impartial basis whether a vaccine is the best response to any kind of a health crisis. Okay, of course they're going to be swayed by their donors. So they can't be trusted. The World Health Organization cannot be trusted to make an impartial decision on vaccines.
Exactly. Not only that, but Bill Gates is also one of the front runners in his demand, virtually, to reduce the population of the world by two-thirds. And so his interest is not nearly so much in genuine health. It's in control.
I believe that the World Health Organization, the United Nations, are using health as a pretext for installing a global governance, a one world government, and it's going to be done. Well, number one, they're using health because people are willing to give up freedoms for the sake of the health of their own health or the health of their children, the health of their parents, that they would not otherwise give up. They know that health is something that people feel threatened. They're willing to give up freedoms in a way that they aren't in any other way.
All right. Let's make this a little bit political now. In 2015, a fellow by the name of Donald J. Trump came down the escalator in New York and declared, "We're going to make America great again." Those were like fighting worlds for a world war. Declaring himself against everything that the globalists have determined is right on the near edge of being completed. For that reason, I believe, Reggie, they have waged the most incredible kind of warfare against him, precisely not because of his tweets, not because of his hairdo, but because of the fact that he said, "We're going to make America great again," and he says, "I am against these efforts to take over America's sovereignty, including the World Health Organization with its implementation." How do you see it?
Well, they hate him, okay? There's no question about it because, number one, he's not controllable, and number two, he withdrew from the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's put it this way. He announced the withdrawal from the World Health Organization. Unfortunately, it takes a year to get out, and by the time that year is up, you know, Biden was in office.
And reversed it all.
Mm-hmm. Right, reversed it all. But I call upon President Trump to use the enormous platform that he has to make this globalist coup a centerpiece of his campaign, his presidential campaign.
Do you think that he would be mocked out of civil society for doing such?
Well, no, I mean,
think about that. We're going into a break here, Reggie. We're having a very honest conversation here, the likes of which would be almost impossible to have on Newsmax, even Fox News or anywhere else. They're just not willing to go there. The question is, are we willing to go there, and do we think Mr. Trump should go there as well? We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
It's a shame that we're coming down to the final segment of the program here today, because our guest, Reggie Littlejohn, has so much to say. And interestingly, she is extremely well-informed. She's a lawyer par excellence, knows how to express herself, has engaged herself dramatically energetically in so many efforts to try to protect us, to protect people against the notorious and nefarious ends to which the world is going. Now, I want you to think about this. In the past 15 years, past 20 years, three separate popes have come out and openly declared their calling for a one-world order. Three in a row, John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and now Pope Francis. Pope Francis has gone the furthest of any of them. So then when Archbishop Vignano comes in and he says, you know what, you've gone too far, this is not right, you're violating the very fundamentals of our faith, Pope Francis has said, okay, you're out of here, Mr. Vignano. I'm excommunicating you. That's what's happening right now. In other words, the Roman Catholic leadership is 100% in favor of a one-world government contrary to the scriptures. What say you, Reggie?
Well, number one, I'm Catholic.
I knew that, but I okay. dared to say the truth.
Okay, and I'm married. I'm actually married to a Catholic priest, so this is unusual.
Okay. Yeah. Now, wait a minute. You're married to a Catholic priest. I thought you were supposed to, there wasn't supposed to be such a thing.
That's right. So, under Benedict,
you see how I'm able to bring the truth out?
Yeah. Under Benedict XVI, they instituted something called the Personal Ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter. And what it is it's for Protestant clergy who are already married, who convert to the Catholic faith, that they can become Catholic priests, and the church will honor their marriage vow.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. I'm one of only 40 women in all of North America, and that's the United States and Canada, legitimately married to a Catholic priest. All right?
All right, so all the old edicts and enunciations or denunciations or whatever, the papacy going back centuries have been declared null and void.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that. So, I mean, this is a much longer conversation.
It is.
And I don't at all oppose celibacy, but it is a practice. It's not a doctrine of the church.
Oh.
That's neither here or there.
Okay.
That's why they're able, that's why they're able to let people in. You know,
okay.
The thing is that you know, they're honoring my husband's marriage vows. Right? Marriage vows.
Uh-huh.
However, if I were to die, you know, he would not be able to remarry. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So there's that. So he has every incentive to keep me.
Well, it sounds to me like you're worth keeping too. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, and I would not say that every prelate in the Catholic Church is a globalist. I mean, for example, there's Bishop Athanasius Schneider, who is virulently anti-globalist.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like the Catholic Church is not sort of like this monolith, all right?
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of controversy going on.
Oh, you better believe it. I follow it regularly.
Church. Right. And so, you know, so there are forces inside of the church that absolutely decry globalism and see it for what it is.
So you're not bowing and worshiping a papal Nebuchadnezzar. You're actually worshiping Christ. Is that right? I'm talking about you.
Yes. Okay. I worship Christ. All right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now let's go to the. Since we're talking about marriage and so on, let's talk about the wedding, the seeming wedding of the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization. They're working in concert then, aren't they?
They all are. I mean, you got the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, which is an arm of the United Nations, and then you've got, you know, the World Bank, and you've got, you know, the G20 and the B20 and all you know, there's so many globalist organizations out there.
Yeah.
And what we are is we are in a situation now where nation states like the United States and all the other nations in the world, all of our laws were under a former system. We're under the system of the nation state.
Right.
And we don't know how to handle globalist organizations, which are unelected and unaccountable to anyone.
Well, they're saying that the nation states, the time for nation states is out.
Yeah.
God decreed the nation states, but humankind, going back to the Tower of Babel, decided we don't like what God said. We're going to amalgamate ourselves into a nation state. God said, not so fast, and disperse the nations. Now we're trying to do the same again on steroids.
Yeah, I mean, in the Great Commission, Jesus says to baptize all nations and teach them to be disciples. So you can't do that if there aren't any.
You got that right, sister. Okay, here's what I have a question then for you. It's almost like you're fighting City Hall, so to speak. In other words, it's a war against David against Goliath. Let's put it that way, in scriptural terms. And you feel that. You know that. It's an uphill battle. It's like trying to paddle a canoe straight up Niagara Falls, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the same thing, even with regard to issues within the church. It's very difficult right now. So that being the case, and you're trying to do whatever you can to help prevent and preserve the order of things that God has prescribed for our country and for the nations, yet the Bible says these things are going to happen. So would you best describe what you're doing as occupying till he comes, that is, until the Lord comes and all this thing falls apart? What would you say is your ultimate belief that you can accomplish on the long run? Or any of us, because you're talking to all of us, and we're bringing you on the program here today because we want to be able to do something to make a difference.
Well, I mean, there's the will of God, and then there's the permissive will of God. I mean, the will of God we saw in the Garden of Eden. That was his will.
Right.
That was his first will for us, that we would be living in this beautiful place, and he would be walking, you know, in the garden in the cool of the afternoon, and we would have direct face-to-face contact with him, and everything would be provided. We would be, you know, all gardeners, and
I love gardening so much.
I love gardening.
Do you really?
Oh yeah, it's the first. I'm sitting out here in my garden right now.
Oh boy, are we ever linked together? We lawyers need some kind of avocation, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And then there's the permissive will of God, and God allowed Satan to cause Eve to fall, but he can bring great good out of evil.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened then in salvation history? It's because of the fall of man that we had, Jesus Christ,
right,
our Savior and our Redeemer. And it was through the crucifixion that, that the salvation of the world came. And so it's not up to us to say, and Jesus said, of Judas, he said, that his betrayal would have to come, but woe to the one by whom it comes. Okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just like, okay, these things have to happen, and therefore let's just be passive and let them happen.
Right.
This is the way.
So we're not going to crawl up on a hillside or a haystack somewhere and clothe ourselves in white garments and sit and twiddle our thumbs until Jesus comes.
No, because that's not what Jesus did. Jesus was fully engaged,
right,
in the issues of the day, always pointing towards the Father in heaven. And we need to be. This is the way that great saints are created. That we are to stand up against evil, and we are to be brave. And by the way, cowardice is a sin, as is laziness.
Oh, now you really have gone from preaching to meddling, sister.
Oh, I don't think that you are cowardly or lazy.
No, I'm not, but there are many people that are.
Well, I'm telling you, if you care about the Bible, you look at the book of Revelation, cowards are the first category of people that are being thrown into the lake of fire.
Revelation 21, and there are very few pastors that will preach from that chapter.
I've actually never heard anyone preach on that.
I have to say the same.
Right. So we are called to be brave. We are called to be active. We are called to listen to what God would have us do. It's different for every person.
Exactly.
I'm doing what God has called me to do.
Right.
You're doing what God has called you to do.
And we're working it together right here on the air, aren't we?
That's right. And it's like this chorus of voices. Every voice is different, but they all blend together to the glory of God.
Mm.
And so, you know, the listeners have to ask themselves, okay?
Well,
what is God calling you to do? And I can tell you something. He's not calling you to do nothing. That is for sure.
There you go. Okay. Well, certainly he's not calling us to run in fear, because fear has torment, the Bible says. So if we're going to live by faith, then we have to be about doing what the Lord puts on our heart, on our mind to do. And it's going to be a little different for different people, because God has created a body to perform different functions and so on in the great course of seeking first his kingdom and his righteousness. So in that context, what would you feel comfortable in exhorting our listeners to do in response to all of this that seems so fearful on its surface, all of this? What would you exhort us to do?
Number one, pray. And pray that, you know, pray against, you know, the godless, globalists. Pray for the people who are standing up against them, like you and me.
Mm.
I mean, I would very much greatly appreciate prayer for myself and for my organization, Anti-Globalist International. We're just a little organization. We're just trying to get off the ground. We need resources to combat, you know, the richest and most powerful organizations in the world, like the UN, the WEF, WHO, the World Bank, etc.
All right. So how can somebody connect with that organization? You have a website?
Yes, absolutely.
Give it to us.
Okay, it's antiglobalist, one word, .net. Antiglobalist.net, antiglobalist.net. So I don't know if you might put that into the show notes, but I would really appreciate it if you would.
Antiglobalist.net. That's very important.
Right.
And when you say antiglobalist.net, what you're really saying on the other side is pro-God and his government.net.
That's right. And you'll see when you get on the website that we have a patron saint who is Joan of Arc, who was, a fierce warrior, a brilliant military strategist, and always, always had her eyes on God.
Uh-huh.
So they
burned her at the stake for it, too.
That's right. And this is, this is a very faith-based approach to the godless, globalist takeover, because we're not going to be able to combat them without Jesus Christ, but with God, all things are possible.
All right. And we have to be able to stand in the evil day. And having done all to stand, what you didn't know is that my latest book, my 11th book, just went to print yesterday, called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. So all of that works together in the context of everything that we're talking about, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It sounds like a great book.
Well, I think you might want to have one in your possession. So, hey, I am so glad that you and I made this connection. I really am. I feel that God is honoring this conversation for his glory. We don't know exactly all that it will imply as it goes out across our country and around the world, but we trust that it will. It'll be on our website, saveus.org, starting this evening, and it will be up there probably for a year. And, Lord, I just ask that you'll touch Reggie Littlejohn and encourage her heart, strengthen her in the battle. We've got to stand and stand. Well, the fear of the Lord is to resist and identify evil and hate it. And that's what she's doing. We ask that you'll continue to strengthen her and provide all the resources that she needs to stand, and having done all to stand. We give you this time, Lord. We thank you that you're honoring it. God bless and be a blessing, my friends.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.